Be seated. Every year, about this time of year, a moment arrives carrying this realization: I miss the sunlight. As it invariably happens, I forget all about this phenomenon during the course of the year. Around the winter solstice, I even congratulate myself about how well I'm managing the lack of light this winter. But then, one day in January, I experience a sort of reverse epiphany. Instead of being struck by the light, I am struck by how much I crave it. You would think that over the years I would have learned to anticipate this. After all, I lived for 10 years in Seattle, that most light-starved of cities. Imagine day after day, week after week, month after month of charcoal skies and inky pavement. My last few Februaries there, I visited a tanning salon once a week. That full-body immersion allowed me to bank enough rays to survive the cruelest month, March. This was better in Vermont, mainly because dry snow is more reflective than wet asphalt. Still, it was there that I learned the energizing magic of a morning dose of full-spectrum lamp light. Now, here in Connecticut, I manage pretty well without artificial interventions, but I still have that annual light-craving epiphany. This year it happened about 10 days ago. I don't think I'm the only sufferer, because since then I've started hearing light-craving comments from others. Now, as of last night, we Northern Hemispherians have made it through the darkest 75 days of the winter. But February and March still lie in wait. Spring won't really spring until April or May. Seems to me that we have a couple of options. We can count the days, or we can locate a source of light. Now, today is one of several Sundays in a row that we're hearing from Paul's first letter to the Jesus followers in Corinth. Paul founded that community of Gentile converts and then moved on to found communities in Ephesus and beyond. Paul, perhaps back in Ephesus, receives a letter from the believers in Corinth. There are matters of conflict among them, and they seek his guidance. Now, here's the gist of the issue we heard about today. In the mainstream Corinthian context, religious practices include the sacrifice of animals to the Roman gods. The meat is then sold on the open market. Should the Jesus followers eat that meat? Now, we live in such a different culture, it's hard for us to slow down long enough to hear that question as seriously as those Corinthians voiced it. But imagine how difficult long-distance written communication was in those days. We talk about email versus snail mail. Back then, it would have been glacial mail. This food question was important enough to justify at least two glacial mail letters, and we're still reading one of them. Now, the gist of Paul's reply is this: idols are idols. They're meaningless icons. There's nothing behind them. So the meat is just meat, and one can eat it or not eat it. But every follower in Corinth has a fairly new relationship with the one true God and one Lord. Those are the relationships that Paul is really concerned about. Not all the new believers really get that meat nuance. Some can eat meat with no problem to themselves, but the example of their consumption might be problematic for others. And if that's a risk, it's a risk Paul refuses to take. In Paul's time, food consumption had spiritual implications, and Paul was concerned about spiritual harm. Food sacrificed to idols is, of course, no concern to us today. But as a society, we have finally become conscious of other concerns about food, from the land it grows on through its arrival on our table. It seems that even today, food consumption has spiritual implications, even if those implications are different than they were 2,000 years ago. Now, Paul seems to be saying that every Corinthian Jesus follower bears some responsibility for the spiritual health of every other Corinthian Jesus follower. If so, maybe Paul is saying that every St. Thomasian Jesus follower bears some responsibility for the spiritual health of every other St. Thomasian Jesus follower. And maybe, just maybe, our responsibility extends even farther than that. For us, the point is about food and about so much more. Our patterns of consumption, our patterns of life can cause spiritual harm to ourselves and to others. When that happens, in the end, the entire community is harmed. On Thursday morning, I went to hear Ruby Sales speak at the Unitarian Universalist Sanctuary in Hamden. Her presence was part of the Deeper Change Forum hosted by the local nonprofit CEIO. CEIO stands for Co-Creating Effective and Inclusive Organizations. I didn't even know about that organization until Martha Dietz sent me an email about that gathering. Ruby Sales is most known because of an incident that took place in her home state of Alabama back in 1965. If you don't know about that incident, I urge you to read the details. Here's a very brief summary. Ruby Sales was then a 17-year-old black civil rights worker. Under threat by a white man wielding a shotgun, she was pushed away by 26-year-old white Episcopal seminarian Jonathan Daniels from New Hampshire. He took the blast and died immediately. Jonathan Daniels is not that well known, but he is on our list of saints that we honor in the Episcopal Church. As an activist, Sister Ruby, as the CEIO leaders called her, has made good use of the 52 years and running that Jonathan bought her. On Thursday morning, she covered a lot of territory, so much that I'm still processing it. I want to try to follow one thread of her thought, beginning with the parallels she drew between the verbal abuse thrown by whites at black children in the 1960s and at immigrant, Latino, and Middle Eastern children very recently. She called the imperative to stand with all children of color all around the world, quote, the spiritual calling of the 21st century. And she offered that the benefits are not just for them, but for everyone, because our society is spiritually malformed. She went on to speak of white supremacy and the danger to white people of what she called soul death. She spoke of the empire, which I understand as what many theologians call the powers and principalities. As she put it, the empire has told us we are nothing, when in fact it's the other way around. They are nothing without us. She called this point in time an important moment, quote, to get out of not only economic poverty, but also spiritual poverty. She calls for a return to Dr. King's dream of building the beloved community. That's pretty heavy stuff. But I can assure you that every person left that sanctuary that day feeling a new hope, a new life, and new light. All this takes me back to Paul. Yes, I believe that our patterns of consumption, our patterns of life, can cause spiritual harm to ourselves and to others. And when that happens, in the end, the entire community is harmed. But let's turn that around. Our patterns of consumption, our patterns of life, can also bring spiritual healing for ourselves and for others. When that happens, in the end, the entire community is healed. Today is Parish Annual Meeting Sunday. Episcopal Church canons, that is the rules for governance of the church, require congregations to hold a business meeting every January. Your business task today is to vote on the slate of nominees for parish leadership, officers, vestry members, and delegates to diocesan convention. In addition, the wardens will speak briefly and the treasurer will give a financial report. I ask you to please read the written reports from the other parish leaders because we're going to use the time saved from those oral reports for other activities. Now, on annual meeting Sunday, the sermon is often a sort of state of the parish address. I thought about doing that. I started to do that. I was tempted to catalog the many ways that St. Thomas's has grown as a Christian community over the last 2 years. But you can probably see that firsthand here in this room, upstairs, at coffee hour, with our children before church, with each other out in the world. So I'm going to leave that with you and talk about something else. 2 Sundays ago, you heard me say that Jesus is still staffing up with us individually and with us as a community. Last Sunday, you heard Sarah remind us that Jesus gave his original staffers 3 years to get up to speed before he asked them to take over. Whether you have been here 3 months, 3 years, or 30 years, you are here at this place, at this time. I can't describe the exact mechanism, but Jesus pointed to your astonished face. And God has whispered into your ear. This parish will never be exactly the same as it is today. The world around us will never be exactly the same as it is today. The triune God of loving relationship has lured us here now. Jesus is holding up the light and offering it to us. It's a mystery. It's a miracle, really. It's a stupendous gift. On Friday morning, after I was up and showered, the dogs, as usual, started agitating to go outside. I put them off because it was still full night. For one thing, I prefer not to walk them in the dark. More importantly, I wanted to sit with the sunrise, something I seldom take the time to do. I thought to myself, enjoy it now, because pretty soon the sun will be up before you are. I'm fortunate to have been able to be a bit of a sunrise aficionado during my lifetime. I like to be settled in when the sky is still as dark as it can be. Then I just wait quietly for the sky to slowly brighten into full light. It feels like keeping company with the day as the day awakes. I've roused myself painfully early for incredible sunrises at places including Mount Rainier, the Grand Canyon, and Acadia. And in that case, both on the coast and atop Cadillac Mountain. I've seen the light come up behind Denali, better known to non-Alaskans as Mount McKinley. Because Denali is so tall, I could see that from Fairbanks, 100 miles away. By the way, in midwinter, sunrise in Fairbanks happens at 11 a.m. For Friday's sunrise, I was just at home in Handen. Fittingly, I sat in the sunroom. Nothing unusually spectacular happened. But something usually spectacular did. From among shades of lilac blossoms, the sun rose, bringing with it the light of another day.